Hello, legendary teachers. This is Upgrade Think Learn, the podcast. Every episode, we sit down with a legendary teacher to hear their thoughts, ideas, and stories about teaching. This episode, we're talking to Ellen, a leading teacher who's worked across Australia in a variety of different school settings. She's also recently completed a Master's in Learning Intervention, and it's safe to say, she's pretty amazing at working out ways that you can tap in and get the most out of any kid. This is episode one of Upgrade Think Learn, the podcast. Ellen, thank you very much for joining us here on episode one of Upgrade Think Learn, the podcast. First of all, I just want to say hello.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. We're really looking forward to getting into it, but I just really wanted to say thank you so much for your time, and it's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
So I guess, Ellen, first things first, why did you get into teaching?
If I'm honest, I started with an arts degree for a year, and I didn't understand studying with no purpose. So I sat down with the course book at the end of the year and kind of went through and decided on what to choose, and teaching was the one thing that really jumped out, that more than anything else that I just could even imagine myself doing. So I thought, okay, well, you know, I think it's hard just coming straight out of school and thinking about going back into schools. So I think that was kind of the hurdle in my mind to, you know, you think you've escaped and you're like, oh, I'm going back. But yeah, I went to my first placement. I thought, oh gosh, I hope I love this. And I did. So I was pretty lucky.
So what was it that you loved about the placement?
I just love hanging out with kids. I find them really funny. Whenever I'm at a party and there's kids around, I love hanging out with them more than adults sometimes. I think playing with kids, they're honest and they're funny, and I can be myself with kids. You can be silly and stupid and they just laugh at silly things, and you don't have to put on a front with them, which I like.
Yeah, they sort of tell it like it is.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, they'll tell you if you don't, they're like, you know, you look really tired today. You're like, oh, thanks, guys. I am tired, but, you know, that's awesome.
What's your background in regards to teaching?
I started in prep. I taught prep for 3 years and then went up to a 5-6. And then when I went to teach remote, I was a 1-2-3 and then a 2-3-4. So I followed my kids up, which was a really interesting experience. And then I taught grade 2 for a couple of years, and now I do relief teaching, so I'm here, there, and everywhere. But I do kind of have the belief from myself and others' experiences that you're kind of either an early years or a later primary teacher, and I'm definitely early years. That's my sweet spot. I get the language. I get the kids. I love it. I love the activities. And give me a 5-6, and I can do it, but it's just not. It's not where I feel most comfortable.
What makes you say that?
It feels a little bit just out of my comfort zone. Some of the content, I love the teaching of kids to read and sounds and, you know, playing silly clapping games and stuff like that. I know you can do fun games like that with 5-6s, but you've got to be a bit cooler, and I'm not very cool.
It's so funny. I remember the thing I love with teaching 5-6 is that you have to work a little bit harder.
Yeah, that's what I don't like.
You have to earn the respect a bit more.
Whereas I love walking into a class and being like, I love you. I love that.
You look so lovely today.
I like your sparkly shoes. Give me that any day rather than, you know, nearly teenagers giving you the stink eye.
I don't know. Today I had a prep come and tell me that they liked my sunspots on my face. I was like, do you mean my freckles? And then I had a grade 5 kid go to offer me a high five, and then he dabbed and then laughed at me. And I was like, man, they're both sort of funny. It's both funny. That's all right. So going back to that moment, you're opening up the VTAC guide or that career guide.
Yeah.
Why teaching? Why were you suddenly like, yeah, I'm going to do this?
Originally, I was really looking at kindergarten teaching, because I'd always nannied. I'd always coach netball, and you know, I just loved always spending time with kids, and particularly I love 4-year-olds and 3-year-olds. But then kind of looking at early childhood, particularly back then. I think it's really changing now. But it's kind of like you just, you know, half days in a kinder, and I was always looking for that leadership opportunity and where for a future within a career. And I just thought maybe potentially that could be a little bit more limited. So I thought in a primary school or in a primary setting, it might kind of expand a bit more to, you know, deputy principals or principals, which is where I was originally going, which I'm not now. But when I first started, I thought, well, I could kind of eventually aim for that.
Every teacher's got a story about the first day when you go from being a student teacher and you have your first moment. Me, I'll never forget that moment when the door closed and I turned around and looked at 29 grade 5-6 kids staring up at me, and I was like, right, yep, it's me. I can't sub out. Like, tell me about your first day.
Because I taught prep, my first day was probably more the transition day. That was the first time I had my first class. And it was intense because they're four when they come, really. A lot of them are four, sometimes five. So they're kinder kids.
What are they doing?
We had lots of activities. So they just come in and they play. And a lot of prep at the start is really developmental play and having lots of things on the tables. But
like toys and things, or toys, like books?
Yeah, books and drawings and...
Do they just go nuts and just like rip them apart and they're not sharing, or it's like kids like drawing on tables?
No, they're pretty good. Kim is very good at socializing them and getting them school ready, and they talk about it a lot. And so, you know, they know the rules, but they're still kids. So, you know, they still, you ask them to do something, I had a few just going, no. And I remember thinking, they're like, oh my God, what do I do? And thank goodness, because I was a new grad, I had really good mentors. So I had lots of people popping in and kind of saying, are you going okay? How are you going? Do you need any help? Do you need any assistance? I'm like, yes, come in here, please.
Can you teach for me? I'm out.
Yeah, because I had 23 prep. So that's quite I know compared to some states it's not, but that felt like a lot. So trying to get around to them all, and they're crying because they miss their parents, and it's a big thing. And you know,
and the parents are crying because the kids have to be left at school.
Seriously, more parents are crying than kids are crying. It's a very emotional day for the parents. Yeah, it's really interesting.
I remember having a parent and trying, like, we had to just build them up to, like, start off by looking through the window and then the doorway and then they were down the corridor and they just sort of wander up. And then we had them, like, out near the fence. And nowadays with child safety stuff, it's like, you can't hang out at the fence, especially don't have your phone out because people will report you. Why the master's degree?
Well, I'm doing a master's of learning intervention, and I saw that there's a lot of children at schools at the moment that have behavioural issues or learning difficulties, and I just saw that teachers didn't quite know what to do with these kids often. They knew what to do with kids right down the middle, and they could differentiate a little bit either side and, you know, make it a bit harder or a bit easier. But when you had those kids that really pushed you and challenged you, they didn't really know where to go or how to structure a lesson for them or how to engage them or how to write a learning plan for them. So I thought, well, I'll learn about it so I can help them.
As a classroom teacher, after you've done your master's now, what would you go back as a classroom teacher and try and help yourself with or teach yourself?
I think the thing that's been really drummed into me is assessment. And the vast range of assessments that are out there that you can use to help you determine what the issues are. I never really knew those before. And also the real emphasis on evidence-based practice, which I think it's coming through schools a bit, but probably not as much as we should be. And where to find them. There's all these websites out there that have a list of them, and I never knew that. So that's really exciting to be able to hopefully bring that back to teachers and say, here, these ones work. They're highly effective. Don't use that one. It's not highly effective.
That's the key thing is we're always chasing to work out how we can help kids in some sort of way. That's been the amazing thing listening to you talk about this master's, and what you're getting out of it is having this set of areas and strategies that you can use to really make an impact. Is there an area that you really wish you could go back and go, God, I wish I knew that for the first 10 years of my teaching career?
Actually, I did a placement at a special development school just for 3 weeks, and I wish I had have done that 10 years ago, because I think a lot of the strategies that I picked up there, I've probably used on and off, but I just kind of saw the benefit to a lot of different things. I think it all kind of clicked into place, and there's so many things that I could use that I picked up there that I could bring back to a mainstream.
So it sounds like you're saying good teaching is good teaching, yeah, regardless.
Exactly.
I remember you sharing stories about the experience on the placement, and you just kept talking about how much of a team all the staff was.
Yeah.
Is that a really fundamental thing to great teaching?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think particularly when you're in a different environment, like a special development school, or when, you know, we're teaching remote, I think those situations you have to become more of a team because you need that support. And you definitely absolutely need it in a mainstream school as well.
And ultimately, it sounds like what you're saying is, so we know great teaching is great teaching regardless. Is part of that letting people know that? Like, what are the things you know can make a difference and just helping them do that really well?
And I think it's using their strengths, you know, as a leader. It's like what you do with the kids. You have to see what they're coming with, their toolkit. You go, okay, well, you're really passionate about maths or you're really passionate about literacy, and letting them run with that. And I think that makes you stronger as a team, because I've had some amazing grads that have taught me so much because of what they brought to it. One who worked with adults with autism and just taught me every day with her was a professional development on that, because she was just so knowledgeable. Another one who came who was just exceptional at maths teaching, just this first year grad, but he just got it and could explain it to the kids, and I picked up so much from him. So yeah, I think that's what it's recognizing as well.
There's something about this podcast where we're really serious about wanting to build up teachers. I think it's that sort of stuff. So would you be happy to do a shout out to that amazing teacher? You don't have to say last name, but I just think do a bit of a shout out.
Larissa and James, they're amazing, and they're still teaching, and they've, you know, exceptional, exceptional grads. And I was so lucky to have worked next to them. Absolutely.
I remember you were talking, like, back years ago, you had a pretty tough student throughout prep, and you had this really amazing experience happen at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like, talk about that. Yeah.
So I was, this little girl was a little preppy, and she was the most strong-willed child I've ever met, which is a great thing. But as a prep teacher, it's also can be difficult when they don't want to do something. And I like to think I'm really fair, but I'm also quite, you know, straight down the line. And
plus you're a grad.
Plus I was a grad, so I, you know, was trying to find my way. But I was quite strict on her and really kept kind of going, no, this is what we have to do, and you have to go to art, or you have to do this, and you have to pack up. And all through the year it was kind of a bit of a, you know, to and fro about who was going to win. But then at the end of the year, she said, oh, do you mind if I say something? It was the very last day of school. She said, do you mind if I say something to the class? I said, yeah, that's fine. This little, you know, five-year-old wanted to stand up and say something to the class. And she said, I just wanted to thank all of you for such a wonderful year in prep. And I wanted to thank you, our teacher, for, you know, being such a wonderful teacher. It's been such a lovely year. And it just really hit home to me that, okay, she doesn't hate me, because I thought, oh, this child's going to hate me. I, you know, stopped her at every turn doing what she wants to do. But it really reinforced how important boundaries are. And what kids love them. Kids want to know who the boss is. And, you know, as long as you're fair and you explain things and
know someone's in charge and they know the boundaries.
Yeah, and they know what the boundaries are, not just arbitrary kind of, no, you can't do that. It's, well, no, we can't do that at the moment because we've got to do this next, but then you can do it afterwards. So even though I felt really harsh, it was because I was being very fair and I had a clear purpose as to why I needed her to do things or not do things or whatever it was. I wasn't just doing it for the sake of it.
Would you want to see that student now? Because how long ago?
Gosh,
how long ago is that?
That's to see it.
10 years ago.
10 years. Yes, yeah, so she'd be high school. So yeah, I'd love to see her now because I think she'd probably be identical. I think she'd be exactly the same.
And those kids with the strong personalities—they're often.
Oh, they're your favorite. Oh, this girl was one of my favorites. Yeah, because you know she's a challenge, and they've got spark and spunk, and you know that's what you go into teaching for, those kids.
I used to always talk about with parents and with friends and colleagues and people that I was teaching with, just I love the naughty kids or the supposedly naughty kids and then the really quiet ones, because I often find they're the cool ones, like this one that you're talking about, where they really show you that you can make a real impact, because you see the quiet ones really by the end of the year, they're coming out of their shell, or you've got to connect and know them and suddenly they just do things a little bit differently and they're a lot more confident, or you can see a spark or something a bit different in them, because I think it's great to be introverted too, as well as extroverted.
Yeah.
But those naughty kids as well, seeing them shift, or those quiet kids as well, they're often the best indicator for us as teachers. Would you say that student is the greatest student you've ever worked with?
I don't know if I have one clear student that's probably the one that stands out. I've got lots. I've got lots of little stories. Like, I had a kid that was so against trying anything because they were so worried about making a mistake. And I fought really, really hard to try to find ways to make mistakes okay. And I remember you saying once that you say it to your kids, and I started saying it to my kids, that about the growth mindset, and that when you make a mistake, your brain cells are actually growing. And I said that to these little grade twos. I said, oh, you know, when you make a mistake, your brain cells, they're growing. Isn't that amazing? And then I remember this kid at the end of the year came up and they said, Miss, somebody's made a mistake and they've just grown some brain cells. Isn't that great? And they gave the other student a high five. I thought, if nothing else, that's, you know, awesome that you have left this class thinking that mistakes are okay, that you learn from them and you get better. So, you know, I've got lots of little stories like that that you kind of work on. Okay, how can I get this message across to you? And it might be just feeling confident speaking in front of the class, or it might be working with other groups, or it might be understanding that not everything goes to a routine and that's okay, and sometimes things happen and you have to go with it and be flexible. Some kids are very rigid and some kids are too flexible and they need to kind of work in the boundaries.
If your students summarized you in three words, what would these be?
I like to think that they would think I'm patient. I am fair. I really try to explain things to them and why, because I think a lot of people just tell kids what they need to do and they don't get it. And I think once you explain things to kids, they get it. You know, like even little toddlers, you say, no, you can't do that because, and they kind of go, oh, okay, yeah. I like to think I'm quite a caring teacher, that I do really care about if a child is upset. I think, you know, if they come into school and they're really anxious about something or really worried, then I really take that to heart and I try to resolve that first, because as I think most teachers know, you can't get any learning done if their emotional well-being is not 100%.
And kids can tell the teachers that care. Yeah. Like, they know when you're not listening. Yeah. They know when you're genuinely listening. Yeah. They know when you actually care. Would some advice you'd give to any teacher is, you know, we all know term one so heavy about like routines and connecting with kids. Is that the biggest thing you invest in at the start of any year?
Yeah. What I really try to keep in mind, it's actually something that my nana used to do. So my nana died when I was really little. So if she was talking to an adult and one of the kids, grandkids wanted to come and speak to her, she was quite a tall lady and she always turned and bobbed down and looked at you and listened to you. And I think a lot of adults don't do that with kids. So that's kind of the mentality I take, particularly at the start of the year, that if a child's speaking to me, I really look at them and I try to build that connection and just make them seem like they're heard and that I have the time for them. I think kids know that. Yeah, kids know if you're busy. And look, as I'm not, don't do it all the time, because sometimes you are busy and sometimes they do need to wait and they also need to learn that it's not their time to speak. So it's a balance. But I think, you know, if they're genuinely curious or have a good question or upset or whatever it is.
And sometimes you're coming in after lunch and they're like, he punched me and he did this and I can't find my book. And you're like, yes. Yeah.
But we also have to do maths now, you know. So it's really hard. I remember, particularly with prep, oh my gosh, it'd be about half an hour after lunch that would be all the issues that we'd have to resolve. So, you know, and sometimes you just want to be like, oh, God, can we just get on with our work? This is ridiculous. But that's part of the learning process and, you know, that's the kids are just learning how to negotiate all of that, and you have to help them.
And I think too, as well, like you can get away with those times when you aren't like listening, if you have that really strong rapport, because kids already know that for 99% of the time, you're really there for them. So right now they're like, yep, okay, that's fine. They go back to things and they know that they can touch base with you again if needed. Right.
And I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned teaching is just the value of building up a really strong relationship from the start.
I used to love term three, end of term three, sort of start of term four when you started doing class lists.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you'd find out the kids that you had, and I used to love like asking, I'd find out like, who's the naughtiest kid that you think is in the school? Right. I want them. And then it used to be amazing just whenever you're on yard duty, you just sort of say that kid's name to them with a smile in a nice tone of voice, do it for the rest of that term.
Yeah.
Already by the time you have that transition day, suddenly like, they feel a bit more connected to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know one of the things you were saying was something you'd like to share is the greatest experience that you've been taught as a teacher. What is it you'd want to share?
I think it's probably, it was taught to me by a group of students, and it was really the importance of what we were talking about before with building relationships, and it was by the kids that I taught in the remote community. And what was really interesting was, you know, you kind of come in, and I found in mainstream classes, particularly in the early years, like we were talking about earlier, you walk in and they just love you and they will do what you ask because, you know, that's the expectation and that's the kind of structure, and you just kind of go through it, and it's easy one admiration. But then going to this remote community, and they get so many teachers in and out, and you know, we had one teacher stay for a week, so you know, they can be really skeptical of you and your intention for why you're there and all of that, even at a very young age. So I think it really took a while to build that trust with them. And at the start, you know, I would ask them to do something and they kind of go nah. And look at me, and I'd go, oh, okay. And I hadn't really had that before. I thought, oh, God, what do I do? And it was a really nice moment when probably about 6 to 8 months in, when I asked them to do something, which previously would have been an absolute battle, and they gave me this look and they went, okay. And I went, oh my gosh, that's amazing.
They're picking up the piece of paper.
Yeah, they're picking finally up the piece of paper, or they're picking up the pencil, or whatever it was that I'd asked them to do. You know, I just, that was a really amazing moment. And I brought that philosophy back to mainstream, because I thought, well, yeah, some kids are easily won, but not all your kids. And some kids need to build up that time, and you need to really make the effort to get to know them and prove yourself and make sure that you are trustworthy for them and that they should listen to you. Like, why should they listen to me? That's exactly right. I'm a random person coming in telling them to pick up some paper. So, yeah, I think that was probably the biggest lesson that I've learned.
Is just invest and invest in getting to know them every single day.
Yeah. And just, you know, it's hard work sometimes, and some kids don't want to open up, but you know, finding that little thing that you can hook into. And again, it's you showing up every day and just being there and being consistent and, you know, giving, just making sure they feel supported and that it's going to be a supportive environment for them.
And the flip side, I think, too, is it's so funny because we sometimes go, oh, God, they're only like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But then we also see the amazing things that they can do as a 7 or an 8-year-old.
And the thinking they can have. And, you know, I went back to one of my schools with my daughter, and one of the kids said, they were asking all questions about her, and one of the kids said, what's her personality like? I just thought, oh, my gosh, you know, this is a little grade 2. And to have that kind of thought pattern and thinking about personality and who this little baby is, and you know, she was only about 2 or 3 months then, so I said, well, it's developing, you know.
Pretty blob-like personality. Pretty blob-like. Loves food. Yes. And lying and still.
Sleeping.
Um, So to go in a bit of a different pathway, finish this sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uni never prepared me for.
Oh. I think children that fall outside of the mainstream, which is why I'm doing this master's at the moment. In mainstream schools before I went remote, I was okay because I just kind of followed the curriculum and the kids all just picked it up. And the ones that didn't, we could kind of, you know, shuffle through and, you know, do some little intervention stuff. Then when I went remote and there was kids that had missed lots of school or for a whole range of difficulties, had lots of hearing issues, and they were way outside of what the norm was. And to try to figure out how to get them to learn something or to understand something, I had to develop a whole new range of strategies, which have been so beneficial coming back to mainstream because there are kids like that. But I think we just kind of blob them all in together often because we don't know what to do with them. So that's why I wanted to do this master's, because I thought, no, there's always going to be kids that are outside the norm and we need to know, or you need to have someone at a school that you can go to who knows what to do with those kids and how to best help their learning.
And a thing that you're so great at is, because we need those champions in schools that call out for those kids, like for any kid, but it's so great that you think so hard and so deeply about those different kids and you really want to know, okay, so what's the best thing that I can do or support someone else to help that kid be successful?
Mm.
And I know a lot of people throw around the word success heaps, but it's so cool that we've got people like you that are actually doing that and really investing to want to know what it is that that kid, like that little change we can make to support someone.
Yeah, and often it is little. Like sometimes it might just be lined paper and suddenly they're writing, you know. It might just be that, you know, the lines were too big or too small, or it might be where they're sitting, you know. Really simple things that I think you just need a different lens with to go, okay, well, what does this child need? They're not conforming to what I'm expecting. So what can I do and where can I go and where can I get the evidence of how to work with this child? And I think that's really important, because otherwise you get these people who go their whole school life without really having success. And that's so sad to me.
That's one of my best friends. He hated his whole school. He dropped out because he thought that he was dumb.
Yeah.
He's one of the smartest people I know, but he never had someone that sort of caught him and engaged him and showed him, like what you're talking about. Ellen, I would like to say thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. It's been amazing having you, sharing all of your background and your experiences. This is our first episode for the podcast, so thank you for being the guinea pig and sitting down here and trying to deal with me wildly gesticulating, but realizing that it's also a podcast. Is there anything that you'd want to finish off by saying?
No.
All right, we'll finish with the word no, and that is Ellen, the legendary teacher, for this episode. Enjoyed this episode? Head to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and leave us a review to let us know what is working well and what we could do to make it even better. You can get more stories and insights from our website, upgradethinklearn.com, or join our Facebook page at Upgrade Think Learn. I'm Dan Steele, and that was Upgrade Think Learn, the podcast.